You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
On Sunday, Russians go to the polls to vote in a presidential election. On the ballot, the once and probably future president.
I have decided he must be like Putin. He must be like Putin. That's a baby.
Мы сейчас победим. И я вас хочу спросить, мы победим?
He's somebody who knows the pains and hardships and difficulties of the Russian past.
And I looked the man in the eye. I was able to get a sense of his soul.
He can think of anything as a betrayal.
There are people who don't want revolution, who want stability. And for us, stability means Putin.
Putin has announced his intention to remain in charge for at least 6 more years.
I found my thrill.
That last voice is Putin, Vladimir Putin, actually singing. It's now his perhaps infamous singing career, but you can't forget his bear wrestling either, his car racing, and his other many pursuits. Vladimir Putin has undoubtedly been the face of Russia for quite some time now and the dominating force behind Russian politics for more than a decade. But a new book by journalist Marcia Gessen exposes some of the secrets behind this man who's changed the course of Russian history, possibly forever. It's called The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. And Marcia joins us today in studio. You can actually read an excerpt of the book at our website, thetakeaway.org. And I recommend you do because it's a great read. Marcia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You talk about the unlikely rise of Vladimir Putin because, as you describe, he was plucked out of security, out of obscurity, to become the leader of Russia. Why did they choose him?
Because they had no one else to choose. It was a very odd time in Russian history. Former President Yeltsin was very isolated, had become extremely unpopular, was an embarrassment and a heartbreak to the country. He was ill. He had a drinking problem. And the opposition to him was growing. He was very afraid that once he was out of office, he would actually be prosecuted for things that he had done when he was in office. And he flailed around looking for somebody that he could anoint as his successor. And by that time, his circle had grown so tiny that the only people he had to choose from were these faceless gray bureaucrats. He happened to choose this one. Now, 12 years later, we know this was probably the worst choice he possibly could have made.
Well, you know, there's been long been a debate over how involved Vladimir Putin has been in the corruption that goes on. I remember an interview with one of the bureaucrats from the Russian government who said, and I'm going to quote here, "Putin doesn't pay much attention to theft because he reckons everyone steals." But many people feel as though this is just something that kind of goes on and that he's not a part of.
Well, I think that if you look at his history, or if you read my book,
right,
you'll see that this is a pattern with him. He was very much at the center of a corruption scandal that broke out in St. Petersburg very early on. He had become deputy city council chairman and deputy mayor of St. Petersburg in 1990. And by 1992, the city council had launched an investigation into his activities, alleging that he had embezzled up to $100 million, an enormous sum of money by the standards of that time, by the standards of any time. But if you just imagine Russia in abject poverty in 1990 and $100 million gone, the city council conducted an investigation, recommended that Putin be fired and prosecuted, whereupon the mayor of St. Petersburg disbanded the city council.
So let's examine exactly what ways in which Putin has had an influence or perhaps changed the course of Russian history. You know, there's many people that I know from Russia say, well, what do you expect? He's former KGB, right? I mean, that would imply that many of the things that he's doing, he's made sure that he's kept them secret. So how has he been able to do that?
Well, I think that the KGB lens is actually a very good lens to look at Putin through.
Really?
Because, yes, he's very much a product of the KGB. He very much identifies with the KGB. And I think he sincerely believes that the KGB is the best system ever constructed. So over the last 12 years, what he has tried to do is reshape Russia to resemble the KGB as much as possible.
Okay, so how has he done that?
He's turned it into a closed system, into a paranoid system, into a system that is closed to information and that is an information bubble itself. So nothing goes in, nothing comes out. And what he has done specifically is he has dismantled Russian democratic institutions very consistently, step by step, canceling elections, making governors appointed rather than elected, making the parliament essentially appointed rather than elected. He has destroyed independent media, and he has subsumed the judiciary, making it report to the executive branch.
And he's also been very active about transforming corrupt Russian oligarchs into advocates for change. That's a kind of a remarkable thing. I mean, you've got Mikhail Khodorkovsky, Russian oil baron, who publicly challenged Putin over these corruption issues. He was arrested a few months later. He doesn't seem to be afraid of anyone.
Well, either that or actually he is afraid of everyone, which is why he behaves in such a paranoid manner. And I think that's very much why Khodorkovsky has been in jail for the last 8 years. I actually have a story out in Vanity Fair in the issue that's on the stands now detailing the Khodorkovsky case. And Khodorkovsky was a businessman who had sort of undergone a number of transformations and I think was very sincere about wanting more transparency, realizing that that was the only way that Russian business was going to grow. So when he confronted Putin on corruption, Putin perceived that as a challenge, threatened him.
It was a challenge.
It was a challenge. It was a challenge to the very nature of the regime.
Yeah.
So he put him in jail and has kept him in jail for the last 8 years.
You know, you once called Alexander Lukashenko the last dictator in Europe. I wonder if your opinion has changed since then.
Well, you know, a few years ago, a friend of mine said to me, you know, Putin is worse. And I was taken aback. I thought, oh, my God, Putin is worse. It's sort of things have been getting so bad in Russia for so long that we kind of got used to it. And we didn't even realize that, yes, at this point, more people have died. There has been all around more destruction and more carnage than there has been in Belarus. I mean, it's a horrible thing to compare awful dictators. But I think ultimately, yeah, Putin has done more damage and has certainly cost more people their lives.
And yet this is a man with whom Russians seem to be utterly fascinated. At one time, he was incredibly popular. That's certainly not the case anymore. But the Russians haven't lost their taste for news of Putin. How does he sort of keep the headlines in Russia? How does he do that?
That's a great question. He has a very particular personal and political style, which is probably best described as vulgar. He became extremely popular when he made his first big public statement, which was that he was going to rub Chechen terrorists out in the outhouse. He has continued to make comments like when a French journalist asked him about religious tolerance in Russia, Putin recommended that he come to Moscow to have a circumcision and said, I will personally make sure that you're circumcised in such a way that nothing ever grows there again. Speaking to a journalist at a press conference in Brussels. And more recently, he has reacted to the protests in the streets of Moscow and other cities by saying that he thought the white ribbons that protesters wear, this is a symbol of the protest movement, reminded him of condoms, unfurled condoms. He thought this was funny. What has changed is that while those comments used to, I think, be perceived by most of the population as, you know, a kind of macho, cool thing to say. And it was kind of fun for a lot of people to have a thuggish sort of streetwise president for a while. At this point, they are perceived as insulting. And I think that those condom comments actually really radicalized the protest movement, which started out as a movement for fair elections and was transformed into an anti-Putin movement very much by that remark, actually.
But do you think this Sunday's election is going to be fair?
No, the Sunday's election cannot be fair. And this is an important point. It's not just a matter of the vote count, which I have no doubt will be rigged. The extent of the rigging remains to be seen. But the very nature of the election is that nobody gets on the ballot without Putin's approval. This is the result of the laws that he has instituted over the last 12 years. So if you're wondering which of the four opponents are Kremlin stooges, they all are. They all are there because he has willed them to be there.
It is an incredible read. Masha Gessen, author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
talking about the situation in Russia, but let's come back to America for just a second. We were talking earlier about a comment U.S. Treasury Secretary made, Timothy Geithner, when he said that it is a privilege to be American. And we wondered if you agree. Is it a privilege to be a U.S. citizen? And if so, what does that privilege entail? A listener named John posted this at our website. My father, brother, two uncles, and many other family members have served in the U.S. military. I want to say it isn't a privilege. It's a right that only some of us have fought for. I agree the wealthy should pay more in taxes, so average Americans who are providing necessary services like police, firemen, school teachers, and librarians can keep their jobs. But I don't think Timothy Geithner, who is himself a flagrant tax cheat, is exactly the best spokesperson for this message. What do you think? We always welcome your opinion. 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to our site, thetakeaway.org. John Hockenberry returns from the TED conference next week. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.